Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea. Jack's Cafe has a new menu for fall, filled with all the flavors of the season, including a hearty sausage, egg and cheese breakfast sandwich, or warmed farro bowl for lunch. Now open at 8 a.m., 2401 60th Street, Kenosha. Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Funeral Home. Why not give the gift of peace of mind? Pre-plan your funeral arrangements with the compassionate staff at Piasecki. They are dedicated to you, your family, and guests. Entrust your care with Piasecki, 262-658-4101.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Manji. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Manji for Education Matters, WGTD Gateway 91.1 HD. On behalf of our President Brian Albrecht and Developmental Specialist Troy McDonald, Dave Cole, Dave McGrath, and everyone here at Great Gateway, thank you for supporting WGTD Radio, and thank you for listening in this morning. As always, we are featuring another program about people in Kenosha and Racine being kind, practicing peace, and making southeastern Wisconsin a better place to live, work, and grow. People who are making kindness their superpower. So today, we welcome Troy McDonald, developmental specialist here at WGTD and a Harvard graduate student with the John F. Kennedy School of Government. So, Troy, welcome. As we learn from the teachers and students at Brass, good morning, good gracious. Your smile is contagious. The whole world awaits us. Let's be kind and courageous. Let's go. So, Troy, so proud of your journey, so very inspiring and amazing to all of us. From homeless to Harvard in 4 years, we're going to find out how you did that. And you have what the people of Finland call SISU, S-I-S-U. It's true grit, resiliency. You never, never, ever give up despite all odds. So, you're a recent graduate of UW-Stout, a degree in professional communication and energy, emerging?
Professional communications and emerging media.
Okay, you're a board member with Peace Learning Circles. We love you. Graduate student at Harvard University, Cambridge, Massachusetts, the Harvard.
Yes.
So tell us about your experiences at Harvard. What's life like?
Yes, and so Harvard has, as you can imagine, they have many different ways to reach out to advanced students, and one of the ways is through their extension program, which allows students who meet the Harvard criteria, but for whatever reason have full-time jobs, you know, mm-hmm. don't want to move to Boston, but still want to have that educational experience. And so I'm one of those students that is allowed to travel back and forth from Kenosha, Wisconsin to Cambridge, Massachusetts for classes, campus events, you know, to be a part of the Harvard student body. So it's pretty incredible. I've had several trips this semester. The last trip was just incredible. There's so many millionaires and billionaires who just want to speak to the students. We had the mm-hmm. president of Ghana, Africa, the last time we were
really?
There, pitching to Harvard students to get us to consider the difficulties that they're having there in the continent of Africa and in Ghana. And so just the amount of thinking and the mm-hmm. amount of – and I don't want to say this meanly, but the kind of pride in thought – and okay. I think we're losing that in this country. You know, they're happy to be intellectuals.
Yes, that's great.
And to be surrounded by people like myself who have that trait is inspiring.
Oh, that's just awesome. So the John F. Kennedy School of Government, right? So what's your goal? What do you hope to do?
Yeah, and so right now I'm kind of still debating that, but the lane that I'm thinking that I'll probably go down is to work with foundations or think tanks to be able to help shape public policy that really affects people in their daily lives. Mm-hmm. I've recently had conversations with the Carter Center, which is President Jimmy Carter's center in Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow, I'm jealous.
And the work that they do is amazing. They go around to different countries that have recent democracies, new democracies, and make sure that the elections that are held are held fairly and equitably, and they station people around the world. They also do so much with health crises such as Ebola and other things. They do work here in the United States with Habitat for Humanity. So working for organizations like that, where I'm able to help shape policy and then go enact that policy, is what I want to do.
That's pretty awesome. So you're being exposed to world leaders.
I met Bill Burns, one of the former Obama administration aides who was the architect of the Iranian deal at the State Department.
Okay.
And, I mean, literally just walked right up to him and asked him a whole bunch of questions. And he had an event at the IOP Institute of Politics. So it's just amazing. They're just there. And you have the ability to peck their brains and it's great.
Wow. So what are you learning? What's tell us, share some inspiring thoughts from your experience.
Well, one of the classes that I'm taking is about the Civil War and Reconstruction era. PBS recently just had a documentary about Reconstruction. Henry Louis Gates, who is the architect of that series, is also a Harvard professor. And my professor was in that documentary on PBS.
Wow.
So it's just crazy.
Wow,
so,
you're hanging out with some pretty famous people.
And so the thing that I've learned about that this semester that has just illuminated me so much, and I'm working on final projects now, is just the tenacity of the African-American people, my people, during that time and throughout history. There is a story, Robert Smalls, who was a slave during
slavery. I've heard of him, sure.
Yeah. And I had never heard that story. That was never taught to me in school. Mm-hmm. But he ended up becoming free, then went to the state house in his state, and then went to the United States Senate. And he found out that his old master, his widow, had died. Mm-hmm. He had died and the widow was left with nothing. The widow was destitute. And the widow reached out to Robert because she had seen that he had become successful.
Right.
So Robert went back, bought that home that he used to be a slave in. Now he owns the home and allowed the widow to move in.
Okay.
Of the man. I mean, it's just incredible stories of kindness when arguably there's no no reason to be kind, and just the compassion and empathy. So being able to dig deep every single week in my class, in that particular class, has just been fascinating.
So tell us about the classes you're taking.
Yeah, so that's the class I was just mentioning is the Civil War class.
Okay.
And that is held taught by Professor Stauffer, just a genius. Mm-hmm. And then my other class is Government, A New Perspective, which is really a fundamental class that's taught by Professor Paul Peterson, an architect of many political campaigns across the country, mm-hmm. A highly respected political operative.
Okay.
And so those are the two classes I've been taking.
Okay, so it's called Government, A New Perspective?
Yes, Government, A New Perspective, which is basically talking about how our government and constitution were set up, but then also tying that into today and how we can make changes and adjustments to our system to be better. We just had a very raucous debate about the Electoral College.
Okay.
And so getting perspective on that was interesting.
What did they say? What are the pros and cons of the Electoral College?
Well, you know, the biggest thing that that students were mentioning is the fact that the Electoral College, obviously the popular vote, if you look at the last election, the election in 2000, the winner of the popular vote did not win the general election.
Gotcha.
But the concerns that were – so that's obviously the biggest you know, pro is, hey, now we have a president who's elected by the popular vote. On the downside, on the flip side of that, you have populations like maybe Republicans in Illinois, that aren't represented. But then the counter argument to that is Democrats in Texas. But the theory was is that you have underrepresented groups who would not get necessarily a fair shake in a system without the Electoral College.
if it's government of the people, by the people, and for the people, how do you accomplish all of the people feeling as though they're represented?
Right. And that's, I mean, I don't want to, I'm just going to say it. Maybe that's impossible.
Okay.
You know, and that's controversial, but there's always going to be a majority, you know, if the way our system's set up now.
So once upon a time, I was a Peace Corps volunteer to the country of Iran. So I'm interested in what Mr. Burns had to say about the Iranian deal. Can you share anything, or is it top secret? Or
no, it was not top secret. It was an event for students. And basically, he said that he is first and foremost disappointed with the way that the Trump administration has kind of spoke disparagingly about that deal, has threatened to, you know, pull back that deal, because he believes that the most important thing is to make sure that they do not have nuclear arms and that they are on the side of the United States. That's the end goal.
Right.
And so he was, of course, there's been controversy about the means to get there, handing cash, you know, you know, to the Iranian government. But, you know, he was just firmly stating his position that he believes that it's better to have an Iran on our side than working with Russia, working with a China, and creating a more democratic pipeline to democratic behaviors in Iran, such as free internet and, you know, things like that, communication channels for citizens, rights for women. And so he believed that opening up that dialogue would have allowed Iran to have a more democratic-centered country for their citizens.
Sure. Okay, so we're going pretty heavy duty.
I was just going to say we're deep in the politics.
So tell us about life on campus. Where do you stay? What's your favorite pizza joint? Where do the Harvard people, kids, go for coffee? What's life like on the, what did you call it? The square?
Or? Yeah, Harvard Square is well, there's Harvard Square and then there's Harvard Yard.
So Harvard Yard.
Yeah, Harvard Yard is on campus, and that's kind of the center of campus by the Widener Library. And then Harvard Square, there's a lot of businesses and shops and places. There's a really good restaurant, the John Hancock, which we have a lot of student events there, and a lot of students go. It's packed on Fridays. How do I say this? I was at the Bill Burns event. And the kids sitting next to me were talking about what hedge fund they were going to work at this summer. So the first feeling that I had, and I'll be honest with you, Joe, is almost guilt, you know, like, wow, because I came from nothing. You know, I had, as we'll talk about. And so here are these kids talking about their vacation homes in the Hamptons and going to hedge funds. And I didn't have that experience. So it's almost like, wow, I can't believe I'm here. And like, do I belong? And yeah, those kinds of things. But the students are so cool, but they're all very driven. They're very motivated.
Okay.
They want to be successful. A good hamburger joint, Boston Burger, delicious. Great, excellent baked beans as well. There's an app for Harvard students called Snack Pass, so you can kind of get discounts at different places around town. Joe, it's like a second home.
So, because everybody, I would want to know, you know, I mean, are you eating lobster rolls out there or Boston cream pie, or are there actual pizza joints on the Harvard Yard campus?
Yeah, there's Shake Shack, you know, which is a famous burger chain. Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of burgers, food, pizza, pizza by the slice type places. Exactly. A lot of people, I mean, there's tons of complaints. And because I'm a graduate student, I'm not a undergrad student, I don't go to the dining facilities that often. But from what I've heard, it's not the best in those dining halls. So a lot of students just go out right on the square and get pizza, burgers, things like that. I will say, there's not a lot of, like, pastries and things like that. I went into a CVS.
Okay.
And, like, here you have Hostess and all that. They don't sell that there.
No, they don't want you to eat that stuff. No. Yeah.
So I was like, come on, man.
So where do you stay? They have a nice place for you to put you up?
Yeah, well, I prefer to stay in my own space. Okay. You have the ability to stay on campus, but I just don't.
You gotta study.
I gotta study, and I do go to the library, and the library is open till midnight on most nights, so I just go there and do a lot of studying if I need to, but I just prefer to be in my own space, not to deal with people running around and acting crazy and I'm too old for that.
So it's a crossword puzzle staple. I love crossword puzzles, but the Yale students are the Elis. Okay, so who are the Harvard students? Who are they? The Red Force or something? Or
Who are
you guys?
The official is the Crimson.
That's our official. I know it's something to do with red.
Yeah, and that's actually our newspaper. We have the Harvard Crimson. That's our newspaper.
Okay.
And we actually hate Yale, so that's like our big enemy. We don't hate anybody, but it's our big rivalry.
So let's go back to January 2014, and you were giving the Martin Luther King speech at Gateway for Martin Luther King Day in the Madrigano Auditorium. I was there, and I have to admit, I was spellbound when you got up because you were young and it was refreshing, and your message just had everybody on the edge of our seats. So you related the story. Can you tell our listeners how really at that point in time you're living out of your car? So can you share? What do you feel comfortable sharing?
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share that time period in my life. So as I was writing that speech, I was recently out of the car.
Right,
I had stayed in the car for some time before then. But my mom finally confided in a coworker who invited her and I to live in her basement. That's all she had.
Yeah.
And so at the time, I didn't have internet access. I didn't have a computer. So I typed the speech here on the Gateway Technical College campus here in Kenosha, and read it out loud at home, or not at home, but in the basement.
Yeah.
To my mother, and there was one couch, and we would switch off every single night. So I would sleep on the couch one night, and then she would get the couch the other, and then I'd move to a sleeping bag. And I read it in the basement, and that was my practice. She was my audience of one.
So how old were you at the time?
Gosh, 5 years ago. So I was 22.
Okay, 22. Wow, what an experience.
Yeah.
One of the things I remember is you said that you had never experienced prejudice up to that point in time.
No.
And that was like a shocker. How could that not be? And you were very gracious in thanking all of your predecessors and forefathers that paved the way. But then you also said that prejudice is poverty, or poverty is prejudice.
Mm-hmm. That was the core message.
Okay.
Is that it's really hard to get stuck in that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the problems that we're having, and I think we're having great dialogue in this country about bringing diverse thoughts into the world of STEM, into the worlds of technology and other industries, and raising children to be in that environment. But I think what we're missing is that, yes, our struggle, my struggle as an African-American person and my ancestor's struggle, was difficult and it was painful. And I don't mean in any way to negate that. And when there are cases of injustice, we need to stand up and we need to call that out. But when we have allies who are white, we cannot just shut them down. Mm-hmm. And when we have people who are misinformed but are willing to hear you out, we need to have those dialogues. And they're going to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with millennials. And I'm a millennial, is that we're so used to these safe spaces that when we have those difficult conversations, it's sometimes hard, but we have to have those conversations, and we need to invite people in who want to be allies and want to support equality and freedom for all. And I think we're potentially losing that, sadly.
You're absolutely right, Troy. We have to keep the conversations going, even though they are painful, and we may have to listen to things that we don't want to hear. It's hard being put on the defensive and, oh my God, how could this have happened? But the fact is it did. And we have to keep teaching and learning as we grow, but we have to be pulling together. One of the strategies that we use in Peace Learning Circles is we give each teacher and we show the kids a bundle of popsicle sticks. And the bundle is wrapped in a pretty ribbon as best as I could tie it. It looks, not decorative, but so you take one popsicle stick or one coffee stirrer out of the bundle and it snaps, but you take the bundle together and you can't snap it. absolutely in the message to kids and to teachers, and we give each teacher one as a gift from us, is that together you can accomplish so much, but how do you stay together?
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to do a one-time event, but how do you maintain and how do you grow from that?
Right, and I think part of how we attack that, and I'm sure you've talked, you and I have talked about this in the past, is Henry Louis Gates has said this beautifully, is that there's 36 million African Americans in the country, which means that there's just the same amount of ways to be black in mm-hmm. this country. And so I think we have to get away of the kind of monolithic ideas we have about different groups,
right,
and talk to people one-on-one.
Right.
And what, and Kamala Harris says this too, and she's great at this, is that when people go to bed, they don't think about you know, race. They're thinking about their kids. They're thinking about
sure.
the same things that everyone else is thinking about. And so when you can kind of create those common bridges, I think that's a way that you go about maintaining those connections, is when you realize that there really isn't that much different.
Well, it's one of the key pieces when we talk about everybody you meet is struggling.
Yeah.
Everybody. And we often ask the question in diversity circles, when was the first time you felt different? And everybody's got something. It's amazing. When was the last time you felt different? Because we all have, we're all carrying around, we're all fighting a battle. You know, no matter what, are you too short, too tall, whatever it is. Poverty is a huge, you know, huge indicator of prejudice and how people are struggling.
But, you know, when I was, and that's true, when I was homeless and when we, mm-hmm. I was in my car and it was a 2002 red Dodge Neon. I'll never forget it. And I was looking up at the street light and, you know, the orange tint that you, they're replacing them with LEDs now, which is nice.
Sure.
But back when I was there, it was orange light. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't go to sleep because I would see that orange light through my eyelids.
So
it's like,
wow.
So that was rough. And then I would have to go to class because I didn't stop going to school.
Sure.
And thank goodness for Pell Grants and, you know, Gateway for helping me out and allowing me to continue because I was going here for school for my associate's degree in marketing at the time. But while I was sitting there and in that seat and the heat didn't work in the car, it was in the winter. It was
yeah,
just not good.
Yeah.
But I didn't think to myself, wow, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, I said, I'm going to get out of this and I'm going to live my best life ever. Like, this is going to, and I, at the time I said, this is going to be a great chapter in a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I always knew that this was not the end for me.
Good for you. That I'm so proud of you. And
now I couldn't have predicted all this.
Yeah,
now, this,
for sure. I was a young teacher right out of the Peace Corps teaching in inner city Baltimore. And I was driving around in a Valiant way before your time. Okay.
Yeah.
And the car looked like it had measles.
Well,
the door on the driver's side wouldn't open. It was welded shut. So I had to get out from behind the wheel, slip across to get out the passenger side. So in the neighborhood I lived, my car was the only car that didn't get stolen or vandalized. I mean, nobody was going to touch this rent-a-wreck. And I remember taking it to a gas station repair shop. And the guy was always patching it up. And finally, he got frustrated with me and said, Mister, you bring this car one more time, back one more time. He said, I'm going to shoot the car, and then I'm going to shoot you. And he proceeded to open his door in his gas station and an office door when there was a six shooter of some kind. Of, okay, I'm never coming back here, you know. So,
oh, my goodness.
I took the car when I finally had enough money to a Volkswagen dealership to buy a Bug, because back in 1969, you could buy a brand new Volkswagen Bug for like $1,800.
Wow. You
know? But I had to pay them to take away my Valiant. $8 for a towing charge, you know, so it's not like they gave me anything for the car, but we all have stories like that.
Right.
So here it is. It's April 2019, and hopefully it won't snow again. But we have the graduating class of 2019 coming up. So what advice would you give the seniors who are graduating? What would you say to them?
At the high school level?
Yeah.
That it's okay not to know. It's okay to be questioning, because there's so much pressure put on kids to do everything right and to you can't make a mistake and that you have one shot. And that's just not true. Now, I will say, kind of get an idea of what you want to do, but there's so many different pathways to do what you want to do.
Sure.
You know, like for me, I work at the radio station here. I was doing podcasts, which are like audio things. I'm sure our audience is familiar with them. I was doing those at home when I was 14 years old. No one listened to them, but I was gaining that experience. If you're a filmmaker, make short films for YouTube. Always work on your craft. Mm-hmm. And so it's not going to be always the pretty thing in the sky that you think it's going to be. Sometimes it's grunt work. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you're going to have to become, as we've discussed, dandelions and, you know, work hard. And sometimes you'll feel underappreciated. But that's a part of the journey. And it's okay. You're going to be okay. You'll get through it.
What Troy is talking about is there's an article in Psychology Today from, I think, the winter issue. Orchids and dandelions. And orchids are kids that can only succeed when conditions are perfect. Dandelions are kids that can succeed anywhere. So how do you get kids to be dandelions? A big part of it is nurturing and teaching resiliency, where sisu comes up from. It's the national motto of the country of Finland. And they have true grit, and they just never give up. Mm-hmm. And it kind of started in 1939 during the Winter War when Russia tried to run them over. But the average temperature was like 40 below zero, and the Finns, the soldiers, layered themselves, but their outside parka was white from head to toe. And they were brilliant skiers, and they were brilliant shots, long-distance range shooting, but they would eat snow, so their breath would be as white as their parka, and the Russians never saw them. So the Russian soldiers called them the winter ghosts because they couldn't see them. Finland defeated the, you know, huge country of Russia, which is hundreds of miles along their border, and defeated them. And so sisu, I think they always had that motto, but that's interesting.
And I'd also add too that when people say talk about resiliency, people just assume that you're going to be tough through that period, that you walk through almost like The Rock in a movie, Dwayne Johnson, and just you're tough. And sometimes you're going to cry. Sometimes you're going to be depressed.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to be sad. But not giving up means that even through that sadness, you have a vision for yourself and you have a vision for the energy you want to allow in your space, meaning the people and the surroundings that you want to put yourself in. And so that doesn't mean you're always going to be strong through it. Sometimes you'll cry. It's going to be tough, but you'll always have that vision, and that vision will be the guiding light.
One of my mother's role models was Sophia Loren. And her famous quote was, "It's okay to cry sometimes. If you haven't cried, your eyes can't be beautiful." So I always look for like inspiration from, of all places, Sophia Loren, and she's still bopping around. So
yes.
What do you got for us lately, Sophia? You know, tell us something. So, okay, anything else you would say to the seniors who are graduating, advice to give them?
To really become proficient, there's a whole bunch of talk, especially if you look at, you know, labor reports and statistics that, you know, millennials and Gen Z, which is the generation after me, that we're going to be changing not only just jobs, but careers, often more so than previous generations. And I think that's true. But I also don't think that's an excuse to kind of just float around and not be skilled.
Sure.
And so I think it's important to identify core skills, whether that's communication, whether that's video editing, whether that's, cook on a line, those kinds of skills that you can then parlay into other careers and other fields, because those are the things that will set you apart. My ability to kind of be really good at the technical aspect of things, whether that's video or audio, live streaming, that is really helped me, you know, here.
Okay.
And that can parlay into different careers. So I think, yes, while you might float around a lot, there's still some core things that you should know about yourself that are important to discover and find out so that you can parlay those to different things.
That's amazing. So we haven't talked much because you have a degree from UW-Stout.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share with us where you grew up and in your journey from where you grew up to get a degree from UW-Stout?
Yeah. So I was born in 1992. Mm-hmm. to my mother was basically, and I've never shared this story, and I'm going to share it because
okay.
I want to. When I was probably, I was always the product of a single mother. My mother wasn't, my father wasn't really around. I mm-hmm. saw him maybe three or four times in my life.
Okay.
And when I was growing up, I saw that my mother's name was on our family iron. And I said, why is her name like scratched on this iron?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's weird. Like, so I asked her and she said, no, I don't, you know, I'll tell you later.
Right.
And she told me later on, and it was because at the time that she was pregnant with me, she was in a halfway house
oh.
because my father was abusive and things like
okay.
that. And so that's an interesting thing to find out,
mm-hmm.
you know, growing up. But we started out in Highland Park, Illinois, which is a nice, I was born there. And then we moved to Vernon Hills and then Gurnee,
okay.
Illinois, which is near Zion and Waukegan.
Sure.
And then Kenosha. So I've been in Kenosha since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
We moved here, as most transplants from Illinois do, for the cheap housing or cheaper housing.
Yeah.
And so we were living in apartments in Illinois, and we had an opportunity to rent a house. So we
mm-hmm.
got a house. And so I went to Lincoln Middle School. In a few weeks, I'm going to actually go back and talk to the elementary school students
there.
Oh,
wonderful.
There.
Good for you.
My first time back in many years.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's going to be great.
It's still there, marble floors and everything.
Yeah, so it's going to be great. Went to Lincoln Middle. Then I transferred because I had some issues at Lincoln. Unfortunately, other students didn't see the qualities in me that I know that I have. So it was hard for me to interact with those students. So I moved to Bethany Lutheran, a private school.
Sure.
And I really started blossoming there. Came to Gateway Technical, or went to Indian Trail High School,
mm-hmm.
Which was a great experience.
When were you at Indian Trail?
Gosh, I'm terrible with numbers. I'm a communications guy.
Yeah, it's okay.
Like 2000, I think, 8
okay.
or so.
So when did you graduate from Indian Trail?
Gosh, 2000, no, I graduated in 2009.
Wow, so I would have given you your diploma when you walked across stage.
Really?
Well, I was the superintendent.
Yeah,
then.
That's right.
Holy cow.
Wow.
We should go back in time, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so
crazy.
Then you graduated from Indian Trail, then what happened?
Well, technically, I didn't graduate from Indian Trail. I transferred to Reuther.
Okay.
I had some issues at Indian Trail. I suffered from depression, and I didn't go to school.
Sure.
My father died around that time. Even though I didn't know him,
yeah.
it was
still
hard.
Yeah.
And so I just went through a lot. So I transferred to Reuther and was in their REAL program.
Okay.
And then, to be honest, I went through a period of depression. And I didn't think I would amount to anything. You know, I was had suicidal tendencies and suicidal thoughts,
oh.
and was ready to pretty much call it a
sure.
a life. And my mother was so concerned for me. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to go to school. I'll go to Gateway, and we'll just see what happens.
Sure.
And then I found out they had a radio station here.
Oh, that's right.
And I started volunteering there and going to school part time. And this school changed my life. It really did. Gateway changed my life, and graduated basically with straight A's. I had one B from Gateway with my associates in marketing,
yeah.
and transferred to UW-Stout.
Okay.
So it was not an easy journey. I dealt with a lot of depression and self-hate,
mm-hmm.
and my mother was there through it all. She is like, you said your mother was your rock. My mom
right.
is my rock,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I wouldn't be here without her.
So what was life like? It's a major jump from, I mean, this is a great, great school, but from Kenosha, it's up in Menominee, right? That's pretty far away.
Yeah, and so I was able to transfer a lot of my credits because they have a great articulation agreement.
Sure.
So I basically started there as a junior.
Okay.
And, yeah, it was not that hard. I was still working here at the time. I was working because I've been here almost 8 years now at WGTD. So I went online. For a lot of my classes at Stout. My biggest strength is my writing.
Okay.
And being able to articulate, I had a great women's history class that I was just excellent in. And so that was really what carried me through. And I had great grades at Stout as well.
So you love to write. What makes for a great writer? Can you give some of us who want to write stuff tips on things to remember?
As you can tell, I'm pretty much an open book,
right.
You know, and that's what also makes a great writer is when you, and again, I understand that there's a place for scholarly, you know, writing
right.
and things like that, but that's just not me. When I can touch on a real issue and bring my real emotion and my feeling to it mm-hmm. and make that jump out at you and grab you and hook you in as a reader, mm-hmm. that's where I think I'm excellent at. And I mean, people want to have policy debates, and I can have those too. But you know, right. my real strength is giving my perspective and making you feel something about that, whether you love it or you hate it. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Well, to me, a great writer is someone who builds bridges and makes connections with the audience, and you have
right.
to give your audience a foundation to be able to make that connection.
Right, and that's exactly right. So I think the great writing to me is writing that you go, wow, that's a real mm-hmm. person behind this.
Is there anybody that you look at as a good writer? You read their op-eds or their bylines?
Yeah, I mean, Ta-Nehisi Coates is just an excellent writer. Dr. Michael Eric Dyson from Georgetown University, excellent. Mm-hmm. I just love Michael's work. I'm trying to think of people that I think are just really excellent. Carol Anderson from Emory University, an mm-hmm. excellent scholar. I've interviewed her. She's great. I also think, too, I mean, bloggers are great. You know,
okay.
Nilay Patel from The Verge, that's a billion-dollar organization. He's great. He's from Racine, actually.
Really?
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant writer and blogger. And I also think, too, that content is content. And so there's great people who do who are great on Twitter, who I think are fascinating, who inspire me. Alyssa Milano is a great person on Twitter.
Yes, yes.
I think what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is doing on Twitter and Instagram is great. And so I pull inspiration from the way that they word things from all those different platforms.
Okay, okay. So you graduated from UW-Stout with a degree in communications.
Yep, and emerging media, which is basically a modern communications degree because there's so many different digital channels like Instagram, YouTube.
Sure.
And so it basically incorporated those platforms too.
So then you came back here to be radio engineer at WGTD. Is that how it went?
Yeah, so I was working here part-time and going to school part-time online at Stout. And I was approaching graduation and I talked with, you know, Dave Cole and I just said, hey, I'd love to stay if there's an opportunity, you know, for me to stay, and I'm here.
Okay. So I know you're appreciative of those who got you here. Who would you like to thank as we're coming to an end of our quick program here? Who would you like to thank that helped you along the way? Lots of people. Your mom, of course.
Yeah, I have to I'm trying not to tear up.
Okay.
That's
okay if you cry.
Okay.
Sophia Loren says your eyes can't be beautiful if you don't.
She is she's just a remarkable woman,
yeah.
My mom.
Yeah.
And everything that we've been through together, the homelessness, my depression, and then because she always believed in me. She always, there's not one day that she, you know,
yeah.
didn't say that, Troy, you're amazing and that you can do all things. People have different parenting styles, and I get
yeah.
that. But the way that she parented me and understood mm-hmm. that, even though I was delicate, that, you know, she just reaffirmed that in me, mm-hmm. that everything was going to be okay, that you are talented, you are special, you are important. Some kids take that the wrong way, but for me, it built me up to have the confidence to walk into a Harvard and say, I can be here.
Yeah. That's very, very true. And Peace Corps in Iran was difficult. And there was a Gertrude Naidoori who was president or director, I should say, of Peace Corps Iran back in the late 60s. And for some reason, she always believed in me. And I mentioned to you that there were only 8 of us that lasted the 2 years out of 36 handpicked people. And then when I taught in Baltimore at Garrison Junior High, the English department chair was a Robert Urquhart Mitchell, and he always signed his initials RUM, and he was a chef from the United States Navy. And we talked about it was an inner city school, and he didn't believe in prejudice and racism because he was a Navy guy. And he said, Joe, I'm telling you, there's no racism in the Navy because everybody has to count on everybody else, and the guy next to you is going to save your life. And you're putting your hands and your life in his hands. So that's where he came from. But he was an inspiration. Coming to Kenosha, Sylvia Leon was a Spanish teacher at Lincoln. And my wife and I were stationed there, or not stationed, we were teaching there. And Sylvia was a refugee from Cuba. And she was dangerous to Castro because she was female and because she had a PhD. So she was one of the original boat people that somehow made it from Cuba to Miami. How she made it all the way to Kenosha, she never let on. But she was a walking dynamo, and her advice to me is, Joe, someday you're going to be principal. I want you to remember teachers are the key, and they are. Teachers are the most important people in any school system. Never, ever hire a teacher who doesn't have these two qualities. They have to love kids, and they have to love teaching. If they're missing one of them, don't do it. Mm. And so all these years later, I still hold by that. You know, you have to have people who love what they're doing and who love people.
Right. I want to add something really quick to talk as we're talking about inspirations. This might sound crazy, but my father was an inspiration of what not to do.
Okay.
And he served, and I wrote about this in one of my pieces for class, but he almost served as much as a guide as my mom in mm-hmm. some ways. For on the opposite end.
Sure.
He was an alcoholic. He was abusive towards me and my mother. And I every day I said, and that's what kind of turned me around when I was going through that funk in my late teens, early 20s, was I didn't want to end up like that. I didn't want to be like him.
Yeah.
He died alone and as a Krispy Kreme. Yeah, and nothing wrong with Krispy Kreme. I love the donuts, but he wanted to do so much more in his life, but he couldn't do it. He mm-hmm. was working as a driver, and I said, you know, I'm gonna do something. And for me, that wasn't it. For some people, being a driver is everything you want to be.
Sure.
Awesome. If you want to cook fries at McDonald's and you want to be the best at that, cool, do that. But for me, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
And he served as an inspiration to say, I'm not going to end up like that.
Mm-hmm. The kids at Bradford always used to say, hey, Mr. Manji, we have all of us. So who's in your posse?
Yeah.
Who do you got? You know, who? Because everybody needs somebody. You can't. It's almost impossible to succeed alone. You got to have somebody in your corner. And it's always good at the end of the day to write down one good thing that happened to you. Even as Marguerite Conrad used to say at Bradford, Joe, quit asking me that question. I said, oh, come on. Something good happened to you today. She said, yeah, at breakfast. My fork worked. Okay, so what else do you want to know? You know? So we've got about 2 minutes left, Troy. This has been amazing.
Thank you.
You're a continuing inspiration. Last thoughts. Any last thought you would like to leave with our audience?
Well, besides saying thank you for even thinking me of being worthy to be on this program,
thank you.
And just the fact that life is a winding road. It's obviously, and again, I'm 27, so I mean, I'm talking to, there's people who've been through so much more life, but for me, it's just realizing that I'm going to be okay and that it's, everything's going to work out, and that life is such a beautiful and positive thing.
Yes.
And to surround yourself, like you said, with a posse of positive people that lift you up to the highest expression of yourself, that's the greatest thing. And so whether that's Harvard, whether that's Gateway, you know, the places, they don't matter to me. Mm-hmm. It's the experiences and the people that I surround myself with. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for being an inspiration to all of us. And we got so enthralled in the middle of the discussion that I forgot the commercial. Hey, everyone, this is WGTD HD 91.1 Gateway, and this is Joe Manji together with my inspiration, Troy McDonald. And we have about 40 seconds left, but thanks so much for listening. Three things, according to Henry James, in human life are important. The first is to be kind. The second is to be kind, and the third is to be kind